Well, let's welcome, here they are, Devilish Mary.
Well, thanks a lot, everybody. Hello, Pittsburgh. Good morning. It's a great weekend. There's going to be a great parade. I think it's happening now downtown. And we're going to play some tunes for you here. The first one is I'm going to do an instrumental version of an old Irish air, about 300 years old when it was first kind of documented. It's called Danny Boy. And I'm going to dedicate it to a friend of mine in Indianapolis, Indiana, who I knew many years ago, Father Glenn O'Connor, a great Irishman, great proponent of Irish culture. And sadly, he is just recently marched in his last St. Patrick's parade, but this is for him. Thank you. There you go. And the last two tunes were a couple of Irish reels. First one was called The Sporting Lass of Tel Aviv, and the second was His Own Kind, dedicated to Daphne Chernobylsky and Adrian Johnson, for whom they were composed at one point in time.
Boy, it's great to see and hear you once again.
Well, this music, I tell you, Larry, this music, like almost all the music you play, it just keeps growing. It's just part of this huge river of music, people around the world, a lot of kids, young people, and you just jump in and you just keep swimming. And
yeah.
It never stops for the rest of your life. You just keep doing it.
Well, every now and then people ask, what kind of music do you play? What's your genre? You know, and it's hard to explain. You know, I'll sometimes say authentic, genuine, world, you know, heartfelt. I mean, it's all music. It's all wonderful. Great to have you here.
Yeah. Well, the Irish music, the traditional music has really had an effect on us. But I'm always very conscious that I'm coming from a perspective of growing up in Pittsburgh. And my family's, you know, mostly here, and I write from this location. So there's lots of influences, because there's so many cultures in Pittsburgh that have influenced my music. So with the banjo, it's not a typical Irish instrument.
No, I was thinking that as I was listening. And I don't think lap dulcimer is Appalachian dulcimer. I suppose, you know, you had Irish folks in Appalachia, still do, right? But I don't think, Jeff, of the lap dulcimers being typically used, right?
We don't think of it typically in traditional Irish music,
yeah.
But the drony nature of the instrument is so much like the sound of pipes and... Drones just work good with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're into the drones. But we adapted our instruments to the Irish music because we fell in love with the music. And that's my father's family had a lot of Irish people in that family, and they played music. And they had mixed up their Appalachian music with Irish music. So they did both. So I grew up with that. Fusing it together.
As long as we're talking about instruments, Kip, you've got a Badron, right?
Baron.
I always mess that up. Yeah. Can you play it just to give people a sense? So that's a single drum making all those notes. Nice. It's wonderful to pick up that mic for a minute. I'm just curious, when did you I know you less well than I know most everybody here, but when did you start playing and what brought you to this kind of music?
I played drums, you know, since I was a little kid, and I've always been fascinated by Baron. I remember seeing like the Chieftains on PBS, you know, when I was younger, and it was fascinating. It was kind of a mystery, you know, how they do that. So I just kind of became obsessed with the drum for a few years and ended up playing with a lot of bands and played with these guys since like 2008. And, you know, I like how the folk music that we play, it's modern folk. You know, Sue writes about the tradition of the area, of the Three Rivers, of the, you know, Allegheny Valley. And I like how we adapt, you know, ancient instruments into kind of a modern form.
Yeah, it's living music, I think is maybe a good way to describe it, is it's always changing, and it's taking use of traditions, making use of traditions, but also putting your own hearts and souls into it.
Well, it's immigrant music, and it draws from all kinds of immigrants from all over the world that we do, because we're so influenced by every kind of music, really, but... a lot of the Irish songs are about leaving home or having to leave home. And I think that might have been how I connected to it, that I'm so attached to my home here in Pittsburgh that it's I started writing songs when I had to leave. And I started to understand that.
That makes a lot of sense. Members of Devilish Mary are here. Devilish Mary, we'll call them, because they're playing from that repertoire. But Janet Hamilton and Burr Beard would round out the troupe altogether, I think. And Larry McCulloch is here. Tell me about the pipe you just played in that first hunk.
Well, it's called a tin whistle, and really it just has six holes. It's a metal tube. It has six holes, finger holes, and very easy to play, kind of like a recorder, but even easier. And it's been around for, you know, centuries. It has adapted very well to Irish music.
And I know, are you originally from Pittsburgh?
No, I'm originally from Speedway, Indiana.
Okay. What brought you to Pittsburgh?
Whoa. I've immigrated a lot of different places. I came to study ethnomusicology at the University of Pittsburgh, which had a program. I think they still have an excellent program, probably even grander than it was in the 1970s. And at the time, there was this kind of really this huge upsurge of interest in all kinds of folk music in this town, a lot of ethnic music, all kinds of people doing it. And that's when I met Sue, and then Burr Beard and Larry Edelman and Jan Hamilton. And we were all playing in different groups of folk musicians, and we eventually formed Devilish Mary.
Yeah, gosh, that seems... It seems like yesterday, but it also seems like a long time ago, too.
We actually played our first gig in the spring of 1978. That was a while back.
Yeah, I can remember the Smoky City Folk Festival of that year, and I'm pretty sure you played that.
Yep.
I think I was there for that, enjoying every bit of it. Devilish Mary here today. We should certainly get back to more music. I'm glad you're here. And Larry, what do you want to do next?
Well, I think, Sue, you've got a song, don't you?
I have a song that I wrote just in the past year. It's about two of my Irish uncles. It's Uncle John and Uncle Mead. And they grew up on a farm in Indiana Township, just out north of Pittsburgh. And when they built the turnpike, it cut the farm in half. And it kind of ruined the farm. And they ended up in California. But they wandered. They were all over the country, and they worked on the Panama Canal. So this is just a story about the two of them and the love of adventure and again, having to leave home. Uncle John and Uncle Mead worked on the Panama Canal. One of them dug the ditches, one engineered the flow. Looking at their postcards from long ago, adventure was their work. They had a romance for the road. And I've never been to Panama, done something that grand, but I've taken lots of chances of morning glory turning sad. Wish I could tell my mother, that we turned out. John and Uncle Mead. Grew up on a farm, but the Pennsylvania Turnpike plowed through their backyard. The well was on the one side and the barn was on the other. Well, there wasn't very much to do but move to California. And I never been to Panama or done something that grand, but I've taken lots of chances. Morning glory,
beautiful song. Sue Powers wrote it and sang it. And that song, the specific story of it, but also the general nature of displacement and mm-hmm. however, whichever context you want to put it in, it really rings true. And there's so many examples of displacement we see every day. You really captured that feeling very well.
Thank you.
In the music as well as your, of course, the words, but just the whole sound of that song.
Yeah, Uncle John was an engineer, and he actually worked, you know, as an engineer for the Panama Canal. And I think that big public works project just drew a lot of people, you know, it was exciting. They wanted to get off the farm and go see the world and get some work out of it. But both of them ended up in the last years of their life in L.A.
Huh.
They moved to California.
Did you get to know them very well?
No, these are great uncles.
That's what I was
thinking. You're thinking, how old
I was
are these
thinking,
guys?
I was trying to do the math in my head. I'm not even sure would you have had a chance to meet them?
No, but we, as it is true in my family, they tell stories about everyone, and the stories get kind of anecdotal, and they get honed down into, like, this is the point of this story. And I heard their story over and over again and saw pictures of them. And, you know, I found where they were laid to rest. I found them in L.A.
Nice.
It wasn't easy, but I found them in the military cemetery in L.A.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have, when would they have passed away? I guess in the...
Well, I think the turnpike was the 30s,
yeah,
I think.
So
they were all probably, they might have left already. Most of the children in that family moved out west, Montana,
It's great
California.
to have those stories to reflect on. Devilish Mary is here playing today. Are you guys playing anywhere later today?
Why, yes, we are, Larry.
Why? who would like to tell us?
Well, we are playing tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. at a new establishment called Scratch. Troy Hill, I think 1702 Lowry Street.
Yes. So 5 o'clock
to
tonight.
Seven.
Yeah,
it's
before
a great restaurant,
the big dinner by the way. Rush.
It's going to be a hoot and a holler. It's a nice little establishment.
Yeah, I've heard great things about that place. And you just, the way I like to describe it is go to the Penn Brewery and go up the hill that you never, you know, you usually stop at the Penn Brewery. This time, just keep going up the hill, and you'll eventually see it on the left, I do believe.
And then Sunday, tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day itself, we are performing at Point Breezeway, 7113 Reynolds Street in Point Breeze, just down a block from the Frick Museum. And that is an incredible establishment. They took a house and made it into this wedding venue, party venue. Just it's all kinds of magic happens there. And tomorrow, we'll be performing St. Patrick's Day things from 6 to 8.
How nice. So two opportunities to see these folks. Larry and Vanessa of Elwood City, right to say how much they're enjoying listening to you, which is wonderful in and of itself, but they're listening in Phoenix right now where they're traveling.
Well, come on down. I think you can book your tickets for tomorrow's Point Breezeway thing online, actually. So it's a modern world, but that's do it.
And those two happen to be some of our favorite listeners.
Yeah.
They're great supporters of the music. So
absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Great people, and they are traveling all over these days now after some quote-unquote retirement. I guess it is true retirement. What would you like to do next?
Irish Jubilee? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this song is a song of a political nature, and it's also about food. And I think those are two topics pretty well interacted with. This was actually written in 1910 by a fellow named James Thornton, who was an Irishman who was well-known on the vaudeville stage. And it is basically what happened when an Irish woman was elected senator, and she decided to throw a big party for everybody. So there are many items of food and refreshment mentioned in the song, and we like to declare an instant Saturday Light Brigade contest. Whoever can count how many, on one hearing of the song, how many food items are mentioned in this song.
So variations, how many different foods?
How many there are.
Okay.
Now, obviously, there's no way humanly possible you could actually get the accurate number. So we're going to say anybody within, whoever can say a number within four, the closest one to this, basically, wins something.
Okay.
We can send them a CD or something. He wins it.
To be determined.
To be determined.
To be determined.
There's a lot of food, and you'll.
Okay, so I'm
in a standard deviation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, standard
so it's
deviation.
Irish Jubilee.
We'll do a t-test afterwards.
So I know everybody's
okay.
interested in political things. Well, a short time ago, when an Irish woman named Docherty was elected to the Senate by a very large majority. And she felt so elected that she went to Dennis Cassidy, who owned a bar room of a very large capacity. Said Docherty, go over to the brewer and order 100 kegs of lager beer and go and give it to the poor. Then go over to the butcher shop and order up a ton of meat. Make sure the boys and girls have got all they want to drink and eat. They made me their senator to show them my gratitude. They'll have the finest supper ever given in this latitude. Tell them the music will be furnished by O'Rafferty, assisted on the bagpipes by Felix McMcCafferty. And whatever the expenses are, remember I'll put up the tin. So anyone who doesn't come, be sure and do not let them in. So Cassidy at once sent out the invitations, and everyone who came was a credit to the nation. Some came in bicycles because they had enough fares to pay, and all those that didn't come made up their minds to stay away. Two by three, they all rushed into the dining hall, young men, old men, girls that were not men at all, blind men, deaf men, men who had the chicken pox, single men, double men, men who had their glasses on. Well, in a few minutes, nearly every chair was taken. To the tap rooms and mushrooms were packed to suffocation. And when everyone was seated and we started to lay out the feast, Cassidy says, rise up and give us each a cake apiece. He then said his manager he would try and fill the chair. So we all sat down and looked over the bill of fare. There was pig's heads, goldfish, mockingbirds and ostriches, ice cream, cold cream, Vaseline and sandwiches, blue fish, green fish, fish hooks and partridges, fish balls, snowballs, cannonballs and cartridges. We ate oatmeal till we could hardly stir about, with ketchup and hurry up and sweet kraut and sauerkraut. There was dressed beef and naked beef and beef with all his trousers on, soda crackers, firecrackers, Cheshire cheese with britches on. There was beef steaks, mistakes down upon the bill of fare. There was roast ribs, spare ribs, and even ribs we could not spare. There was reindeer, snow deer, deer me and antelope. The women ate so much melon, the men said they cantaloupe. There was red herring, smoked herring, herring from old Aaron's Isle, banger loaf and fruitcake and sausages a half a mile. There was hot corn, cold corn, corn kicking honeycomb, red birds, red books, sea bass and sea foam, fried liver, baked liver, carter's liver prills. And everyone was wondering just who was going to foot the bill. Well, we ate everything that was down upon the bill of fare, and we looked on the back just to see if any more was there. For dessert, we had ice picks, toothpicks, and a piece of skipping rope. And washed it all down with a big hunk of shaven soap. The band played hornpipes, gas pipes, and Irish reels, and we danced to the music of the wind that shakes the barley fields. And when the dance was over, Cassidy said to sing this good old song. Should old acquaintance be forgot, wherever they have stayed, think back in the good old times we had when we listened to Devilish Mary on the Saturday Light Brigade. If you can guess how many food items, now not that they would be normally edible, but they were actually mentioned as being consumed.
Yes, there's soap in there, but you could eat the soap.
Right. Is seafoam considered something edible?
It's on the menu.
Lambs or
whatever was on the menu of this extraordinary feast, and I promise you a good portion of that will be available at the Scratch tonight.
I have a guess, but I don't. I think, was it in the 50s?
Warm.
Okay.
You lost me on the oatmeal.
Yeah.
They come pretty rapid fire.
They do. They do. It'd be.
That's true. The Vaseline stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah. As you were listening.
He's cooking. Skip that move.
So everybody was going two. What's Helen McCulloch talking about? This is easy. Two. And then they do come rapid fire.
Now, that's
fire.
The type of song that they call Irish-American music that was really, really popular. When Irish people came in, they after bringing their traditional music, they really adapted to Tin Pan Alley and vaudeville of the day, and a lot of songs like that.
That song reminded me of If I Had But 50 Cents. Do you know that song? Yeah. It had me thinking about that. Yeah. Another one of those continuous buffet songs. Devilish Mary here. They're going to be at Scratch tonight, 5 o'clock, and then at Point Breezeway tomorrow. Did I get that? Yeah, I've got that right. Tomorrow at 6. And you're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings on Community Radio. Thank you for doing that. If you have any comments or want to say hello, you can text us at 412-200-5975, or you send an input by going to our website at slbradio.org. What is next? I want to be sure that we celebrate with so much music since we have you here today. Or Jeff and I could talk for 20 minutes.
As we often do.
Well, I'd like to do a song, and another one that I just wrote, because I learned of a story about a riot that was led by women, mostly Irish young women, really girls, teenagers, who worked in the cotton mill factories in the north side here. Have you ever heard this story?
Do you know about when?
1848.
I think I have heard this story, but only once, and from a woman who would have been in her 80s in the 70s, in the 1970s. So I think she knew it from her mom or grandparents.
That at one time there were they tried to create cotton mills where they'd weave cloth, and it was machine. So it was a factory setting, and a lot of children worked in these mills. So it was this is 1848. It's before any kind of child labor laws. So if a family needed money, a child went to work. But a lot of girls did the weaving, and many of them were Irish girls. And this place where we are right now on this location was Allegheny City, and this is where these mills were. It's the idea really of that it was unusual that the women led the strike and forced the owners to, hear their demands. And what they were asking for was a 10-hour day. So they were working like 12 hours a day. So, and they didn't get it then, but they started a whole movement that they made it more difficult for children to work, they got the 8-hour day later on, but this was one of the big catalysts that started those reforms. So I like it as a female empowerment song. So this is, I guess, for all the ladies who have to stand up. And I still don't have a title for this song. I've been calling it Equal Pay, Allegheny City, 1848. But sooner or later, it'll get a title here. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I work harder than I have to, just to prove I can do this job. Sometimes I feel so separated when no one will back me up. I don't really care what your buddies say about me. I don't really care if they look my way. We're the riot girls of 1848, and I want it now, my equal pay. Breaking down the doors, I found out the hard way that I could be ignored, and all the hearts that I thought that I'd break, they broke my heart much more. I don't really care what your buddies say about me. I don't really care for the games they play. We're the riot girls, 1848. I want it now, my equal pay. What your buddies say about me, I don't really care if they look my way. We're the riot girls of 1848. I want it now, my equal pay. I want it now, my equal pay.
Beautiful and evocative song that is actually as up to date in many ways as, 100 years later.
I forgot to say that in the papers they criticized the young women for not acting ladylike with their strike because they took axes and they broke down the door of the factory. Like, they broke down the door, and in the old newspapers in Pittsburgh, they called them Amazon women.
Huh.
The Amazons of Allegheny City.
That's something.
There's my Amazon.
There's your song title. There's your song title.
Amazon.
Amazon, Allegheny City, Amazon. That's actually good.
That's good. Look out for Bezos. He'll sue you.
And that's why they lost their court case, because the lawyers tried to defend them that these are helpless, defenseless little young women. They couldn't have caused all this, turmoil. And they said they broke down the door. They were Amazons. They were physical. They fought. They don't need any help.
We have friends at the Allegheny City I think it's Historical Society, but there are a number of folks that have really studied the history of the area, and we might be able to find some pictures of. I don't know if you've looked for them yet.
I haven't seen any pictures. It was a big newspaper story. They actually thought that people would be afraid to immigrate to Pittsburgh because the women were so dangerous. I actually read this.
Now, the woman that I told you I knew, just a short story, her name was Sarah Nusser, N-U-S-S-E-R. And Sarah used to tell all sorts of stories about many things, but also textiles here on the north side. And she told a story about a World War II effort where women were creating lots of things. And I think one of the things they were making, if I remember her story correctly, were pantyhose. Because of the shortage of nylon and or silk, and that they used to race to see who could make these garments the quickest. And she was talking to me about races she would have with her partner, and every now and then they'd make one with three legs instead of two. And she has unfortunately passed, but I'll bet you she would know either, not firsthand, but secondhand, most likely about this incident. Maybe some of her family is still around.
Well, the cotton mills were replaced with steel mills.
Yeah, yeah. It's in those towns, like I think of Lawrence, Massachusetts, where the mills are once were plentiful. There aren't too many up there anymore. That was Sue Powers. Devilish Mary is here. We're excited because Larry McCulloch has made it back to Pittsburgh from New Jersey, and we're happy happy to have you here. And we have about 8 minutes of radio time, 8 or 9 minutes, just to help you plan, because I know there's a lot of different things you can do. What would you like to do?
Well, excuse me. We'll do a couple reels. First one's called Scalloway Lasses, and then the Old Torn Petticoat. These are just typical Irish reels you would hear at the Cayley Dance. And I know there's a lot of Irish music activity throughout the year in Pittsburgh. There's a Cayley group, and I know I used to play with a great fiddler here named Peter Shovlin. Became a violin maker as well, and I think his kids, maybe three of them, operate the Shovlin Academy of Irish Dance, and there's some other academies. They're probably extremely busy this weekend. Shout out to them. But yeah, there's a lot of Irish music throughout the year. There's actually a group here called Cultus Celtori Éireann, which is Irish for Irish Musicians Association. It's a movement headquartered in Ireland, but they have branches literally all over the world. There's one of them here in Pittsburgh. I think it operates out of the Irish Center down Ford Avenue in Squirrel Hill. And if anybody is kind of liking this music that we're playing, there's a lot of it around Pittsburgh all throughout the year. Just get on your magical internet and start looking it up. You know, Irish music in Pittsburgh, there's a lot of, you know, dance and music. I think there's songwriting and song singing sessions at various places around town. And here's a couple reels we'll play. Oh, and here on the north side, there is the headquarters of the internationally famous Balmoral School of Scottish Piping, run by George Baldrose, who also plays, perhaps in secret, Irish bagpipes as well. So he's got all kind of crazy bagpipes over there. So just anybody who's interested in bagpipes, talk to George. It's all here in Pittsburgh. You got everything. It's an amazing town.
Not much of a secret anymore.
Okay.
No.
Anyway. Yeah, thanks a lot again.
You just outed George.
As an Ellen Piper.
Yeah.
No, he's got a great story about those pipes, too. Yeah, there's so much music in Pittsburgh. Like I say, you know, when we started this group like 40-some years ago, there was a lot, and now there's just so much more. So thanks to you, Larry Berger, and all the crew here for continuing to sort of foment this local music all throughout the year.
Oh, and thanks to you. I mean, we are all playing so well. And what's fun is... this is continuing, and it's not surprising, but music is continuing to go from generation to generation and also across different walks of life. So it's really exciting, especially in these times, to see barriers being broken through and people coalescing around something that is authentic and enjoyable and thought-provoking, too.
I would have to say that, you know, when we started playing Irish music, it was really only Irish people or Irish Americans that really were interested. I would say at this point, you can find Irish music in every country in the world, probably even North Korea, very quietly, but literally everybody plays it everywhere. It has just been so adaptable. A couple of reels here. Three times each, maybe.
Okay.
Members of Devilish Mary, and you know, there's probably a little more time if you.
We thought you had things to wrap up.
Oh no, no. You know what? I'm gonna let you think while I thank our guests, and then we'll have you play us out.
Oh, here we go.
So let me just thank Ashley Priori of the Queen's Gambit Chess Institute. Also, our guests from the Andy Warhol Museum. Thank them for joining us today. Eileen Valoria and Shannon Thompson. Thanks to Chad Green for a great mix throughout the morning today. And thanks to Ricky and thanks to you for being along with us. You can join us next week for the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. And Kip, Sue, Jeff, and Larry, thank you, Devilish Mary.